communication in marriage. How well are you doing? Today on Life Talks, where that's what we're going to be talking about is communication in marriage. And Dan, I've been married for 24 years. You've been married for 7,000 years.
It'll be past by the time you hear this, but tomorrow is my 38th.
38.
And it seems like
years together.
Yeah, I got married at 8/4/84.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah,
that's really awesome.
I had to wait 3 extra months to get married because my wife wanted that date.
Oh, my goodness. See, my wife and I can never remember our anniversary date. We never can. And so we got married in 1998.
I can never forget mine.
And so she's like, can't we just make up our anniversary date being 8/8/98? And I said, baby, that's not our. She says, who cares? Let's just make it. I said, no. But I can't tell how many years we have forgotten what's our date. It's either May 8th or 9th.
And
I can never remember.
You just admitted that in public.
I did. I'm sorry. We're already distracted. So we're talking about communication and marriage. And so this
communication point number one. Remember the date you're actually married.
It's great for me is that my wife doesn't remember either. Liz doesn't remember.
Yeah, very convenient.
But this is a big one. I mean, if you think about it, it doesn't matter how long you've been married, what your Enneagram number is, you know, how what your compatibility is. There always seems to be communication issues within marriage. And this is something that's been fresh on your mind because you're doing some premarital counseling and you're trying to help these young, you know, idealist, you know, couples that believe they're going to have this amazing marriage. And I hope they do, but you're this wise old sage. that has traversed the landscape.
I know all the things not to do in terms of good communication.
Oh, these are all the mistakes I made.
Yes.
So I'm Ben, you're Dan. We're two of the teaching pastors here at Life Fellowship. And so we're going to be talking about communication and marriage. And Dan, you have 15 things.
Yeah, I'll never get through all of them. So we'll cherry pick them or do 2 episodes or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, I think fundamentally the first thing you got to remember is this. Men and women don't communicate in the same way. We just simply
don't.
Isn't
that like a radical thing to say? Like there are certain things that men do and certain things that women do?
Yeah, you know, it's not super politically correct. But, you know, today you need to shut your brain off and toe the party line.
But there is a difference between men and women.
The big difference between men and women and the way we communicate, the way we process information. You know, they wrote a book several years ago, John, I can't remember his name, but it was Women Are From Venus, Men Are From Mars.
Yeah.
And it kind of explored the differences in that. Mm. And it's biological.
There is a book that you probably remember because it's really old. But it was called, I'm just teasing him, all episode long.
In a minute, I'm going to get up and walk out, and there's going to be dead silence on me.
But do you remember His Needs, Her Needs?
What do you mean that's an old book?
If you're listening to this, it's an old book.
No. It's a great book. I'm marrying 4 couples this year, and all 4 of them, that is on the required reading list.
Okay, but when was it written?
90s.
No, it's at least in the 80s. If something was written in the 80s, it's officially old.
Hey, Siri, when was His Needs?
This is literally happening as we talk. I'm going to be proven right. I promise you I'm going to be proven right.
Well, we'll see.
Dan's...
But while we're waiting for the slow internet service here to...
I'm telling you, His Needs, Her Needs was written in the 80s. Anyways, Britt, why don't you look that up for us? Yeah, Britt's going to do that.
Because mine's just not working.
Okay, so give me these. You're saying men and women are different, correct?
Yeah, and the way we process information, and you know, men tend to be a bit of a stuffer. We will wait and wait and wait and wait. Women, they need to get it out. Women want to be heard. Men want to fix things. That's probably the biggest thing. And you know, we were even talking last night and kind of making some jokes about how they in their relationship are already processing their communication styles and all the different things that are going on. And the reality is that women, when sometimes they just want to know that we're listening to them.
Yeah.
And you know, and it's kind of a little joke we make that men have a biological
1980s. Yes.
Mid-1980s.
All right.
I use a revised
I was right.
It. So this is the most convoluted
episode we've ever done. So. It is an old book then.
Well, so's the Bible.
Okay. All right. So I'm sorry. We're distracted.
And what were
again.
We talking about? What's the topic we're
communication and marriage. So
Dan 1, Dan 0.
Okay. So give us.
Yeah, no, but the reality is that men in the way that we communicate with women, oftentimes we shut down immediately upon the conversation because the first thing we hear is, you've got to fix this. And so we immediately approach it in a way that's more head than heart, while a woman is sharing her heart, and she doesn't need our head at that moment. Yeah. And so from the very beginning of the conversation, from the very beginning of an argument or whatever, we're on two different channels, so to speak.
Yeah, when our wives are sharing with us what issues they went through that day, they are looking for empathy, not solutions.
Yeah. And so when we say, well, why didn't you or why don't you, it feels cold to them. Mm-hmm. It's not like there's no empathy on that. There's just simply the utilitarian solution to, well, if you don't want to feel this way, then do this or don't do that. and it comes across cold and harsh.
Yeah.
And so then the communication breaks down. And so either it escalates or it terminates. Mm. And so the escalation can be, you're not listening to me. Mm-hmm. And then the voice gets raised and the tension rises. And then he gets defensive because that's our second response. Mm. Our second response is, well, now it feels like it's personal.
Right.
It's I didn't respond in the right way, so now it's my fault. Mm-hmm. Why are you yelling at me? Why are you blaming me? And so then we go into this defensive mode. And when you're in a defensive mode, you don't get past the thing that you're defending about.
Right.
So there may be 12 things that are on her mind, and it's not until she gets to the sixth one that she's got to the important one, but you're still stuck on number one because you gotta rectify that. You've got to respond to that. And so that's one of the tools that I use when I'm coaching families is when you are involved in communication, there's a three-step process I think is really important. The first one is you listen. Mm. And by listen, that means you put away the distractions, you set your phone down, you turn off the television, you turn away from the computer, whatever it is that has the potential to distract you. And then you let them continue saying what they're going to say until they're finished. And that's important because most men, again, we're going to jump in, we're going to interrupt.
Right.
And also because men, again, we're in fix-it mode. Well, we don't want to fix all 12 things until we've addressed the first thing. And then once we've done the first thing, we'll do number two, then number three, then number four. But they need to unload the whole truck.
That's right.
So what you do is you sit there and you listen and you're trying to remember what they say so that when they get done, that's the second step is that you repeat what you heard them say.
Yeah. So what you're saying is this is how you feel.
This is what I heard you say. Mm-hmm. Am I correct? Mm. And so you say, I heard you say that this was frustrating and that you wished we had done this and that the kids said this and did I get that right? Mm-hmm. And then they'll reframe it. Mm-hmm. Chances are you didn't get it right. All right. And so then you respond. And that's when the roles have to shift. You have to let your partner respond without interrupting them. Mm. One of the most dangerous things to do when you're trying to communicate is to talk over somebody or to interrupt them.
Yeah.
It's lacking in courtesy, but it is also it is also not allowing you to advance further in the conversation than you need to.
That's right.
And you need to go further in the conversation. You'll be stuck on the first step if you don't do that. So you listen, then you repeat, and then you respond. Mm. And those are important things. Another tool that I've used over the years in coaching, and this one is amazing how effective it is, and a lot of people don't do it, but that is this. Usually, whenever you're angry and you're communicating with hostility, you start separating. If you're not separating, there's always a danger that it's going to get physical and hostile. So when it becomes toxic when you get up in each other's personal space.
Yeah.
But the other response is to leave the room. Mm. You walk outside into the yard. Mm. You get out of the car. You leave the restaurant. Those things then put barriers and space and distance between you.
Yeah.
Now, let me say this. If the person you're talking to is threatening to get physical or whatever, you need that space.
Absolutely.
Yeah, don't stay there and let them smack you. But on the other side, understand that you're not going to be able to resolve that from two other rooms where you're shouting at each other or even just yelling across the same room. Mm. So one of the things I often say is that when I see the temperature being raised in a conversation, and usually it gets raised, you can tell it by several things, the volume. Mm. The speed with you're speaking, the intensity with which you're speaking, and then the types of words you're using.
Yeah. Usually there's a tone,
yeah.
Yeah.
And that you start using very broad or very specific terms. So like, all the time you do this, or you never do this. So that's the broad idea.
Yeah.
Or then it becomes very, very specific. you said this, you did this, and then it becomes
accusatory.
So both those extremes are very dangerous. So one of the suggestions I've found to be very effective is touch, gently touch while you're communicating. So the way I've done it strategically in my office is I'll say, okay, what you have to do is you have to lay your hand on top of his hand or her hand while you're talking, and you must look at them while you're speaking. Don't look at me. Because I'm not part of the solution and I'm not part of the problem. I'm just a piece of furniture. You got to look at them, but you've got to be touching them.
I've had
them refuse to do that. I can't do that. And one of the reasons they can't do that is because the intimacy of touching is a barrier to their anger. And so I say, okay, then we'll just wait until you feel like you can. I love awkwardness.
Awkward silence.
So we'll just sit there for a little while.
Yeah.
And when it gets to the point where, you know, everybody is super uncomfortable, I'll say, okay, can we try it now?
It's really interesting that you bring that up because, you know, I'm going to school. I'm taking all these family therapy classes. And there's actually one of the theories on what you're talking about is what you just mentioned is if you want to change the way you argue, what this one person suggested was, you know, hold hands and sit knee to knee.
Yeah.
Letting your knees
I've
touch.
I've literally done that.
And hold hands and say, okay, now you can talk about what the disagreement is about. But when you do that, it's really confronting all of these emotions you have inside, but you have a very vulnerable and very intimate touching.
Often there are tears that come when you do that.
Yeah.
And the reason and the posture that you just described is so smart. It's because when you're knee to knee and you're hand to hand like that, holding both hands, you don't have a choice but to look at each other.
That's right.
And when you look at each other, you start sensing pain and you start sensing fear.
Yeah.
And some very intimate emotions that often emerge that you don't have when you're shouting or when you're not looking at each other or when you're looking at a third party who's trying to referee.
Or where your arms are crossed.
Arms are crossed and you've got a barrier between you and them. Yeah, so that physical thing. I even go this far. I said, if you're arguing in bed, which I don't recommend, but even if you're arguing in bed, your feet have to touch. And that sounds really, really corny. And they always laugh when I say that, but I make them promise me. If you're laying in bed and you're arguing, make your feet touch. And, you know, it's kind of funny because sometimes they end up making love. Because everybody knows that you know, half the fun of fighting is making up, right?
That's right.
You know, for married folks. So, but the issue is that physical intimacy is really important. I'm going to do another one. Then I'm going to toss it over to you because I want you to talk about the four horses.
The four horsemen.
But the other thing, too, is when you're arguing, really work at avoiding those trigger terms I just mentioned.
Always, never.
Always, never, everyone.
Yeah.
Those really broad ones. People who know me real well know that often when somebody comes up to me, they'll say, everyone's upset with what you did. Really? Everyone. Okay. Help me understand how you got this information. Did you take a survey? You
know,
Give me the
names.
Are you interviewing people as they leave?
Yeah.
How is it that you've come across the conclusion? And by the time I get done with my little game with them, I find out it's usually them and one other person. The other person didn't have enough courage to say, I disagree. But we use that. And the reason we do that is because we feel like it empowers the conversation. It gives more credibility to what we're saying.
Yeah.
But in the end, it's usually a lie.
That's right.
And so you have to break it down to its basics. So avoid those trigger terms. Another trigger, you know, there's a list of words I say you should always avoid. Some people grew up where they throw around the word hate really easily. And, you know, I see little kids scream at their parents, I hate you.
Yeah.
Not a word that we allow to be thrown around
right.
like that. Even
right.
in anger, there are certain words that in anger are off limits. Well, I say this to married V, the word divorce ought to be off limits.
That's right.
Just not used. Back in the days when people used printed dictionaries, I would say, you ought to have a ceremony in your you know, living room some night, your first week of marriage, where you go in and you take a razor blade and you cut the word divorce out of your dictionary just to remind you that this is not a word you will ever use, no matter how mad you get or how upset you get, you'll never use it. Now, today, we don't use printed dictionaries. But I do think those kind of rules, no matter, because what you're saying is this, as upset as I am, as angry as I am, as hurt as I am, this is not on the table. Mm. So we're just not going to use that word. Mm-hmm. We'll find other words that can express our frustration, but let's not throw a nuclear bomb when a fly swatter will
absolutely.
Do.
So, absolutely.
So tell us about these.
All right. Well, I'm in the throes of learning so much about marriage and family therapy, but one of the things I found interesting, and it related to this topic because the chapter I just read in one of my course books, when you said I want to do book on communication and marriage, I'm like, oh, this would be really interesting because I just read this the other day. But Gottman, there's this idea of the Gottman's Four Horsemen, and he was a therapist that did a lot of research for 30 years, studied couples, and he could accurately predict a couple's tendency towards divorce with something like 97% accuracy, mm-hmm. with these four main communication issues. And when I saw that and read that, I was like, whoa, that's pretty significant, you know? So here's what the four are: criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. Now, you just mentioned a lot of those, but what criticism is this idea that you're always looking at the negative thing. You're always, you know, and what he says, what Gottman would say is that women are tend to do more of the criticism. And so they always bring up what is wrong. And that's something that people have to be careful of, that they're not always looking at the negative things. You know, there might be 10 things that go well, but two things that don't. But what do you want to talk about? The two things that don't go well.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm glad you mentioned that. And I would say I see this very common from abusive men.
Yeah.
Men who are willing to strike a woman often will precede that. It's kind of like softening the target little bit by telling them they're stupid, they're lazy, they're ugly, they're fat, they're, you know, all these different things.
Yep.
Very, very harsh terms.
Yes. So criticism is one. The next one is contempt. This idea of contempt comes down to this: I believe I'm better than my spouse.
Yeah.
You know, that I am superior to them and at some level. And so you look down upon them. You look at them, they're not as spiritual as you. They're not as smart as you. They're not as helpful as you. And so you look at the other person. And what happens, I've seen this a million times, if the enemy can tempt you to have this kind of mindset, eventually what you will do is you will look at your spouse as if they are the enemy. And to me, when a couple comes to the point where they look at the spouse and say, you're the enemy, and not Satan is the enemy, that actually the enemy has won. Because the devil wants you to rethink that your wife or your husband is the enemy and not him. Mm-hmm. And so if he can make you think that all of my problems reside in the fact that I am living with this person, that's contempt. And when enough offenses take place that don't get resolved biblically, where there's not healing and forgiveness, this contempt just grows. And all of a sudden you feel like I can do no wrong and he can do, or she can do no right.
Yep.
And that's a very dangerous place to be in a marriage. The fourth one is defensiveness. You mentioned this. And defensiveness is simply not taking responsibility. It doesn't mean that, you know, you might have a disagreement where you're saying, listen, I disagree with your interpretation of events. I believe I was like this. You believe I was like this. Sometimes it's hard to find resolution to those. I'm not talking about that. What I'm talking is never taking responsibility for what is wrong, for what you've done wrong. And I can't remember where I heard this, but I was listening to one of those conversations on 106.9, and it was on marriage. And the guy that was speaking, he was a marriage counselor of some kind, and he just said, listen, if there's a problem that you are arguing about, and let's say you own 5% of the problem, own 5% of the problem. If you think 95% of it is the other person, I'm 5%, own the 5% and don't worry about the other 95%. And I thought that was really good advice to say, I'm responsible for at least some level of this miscommunication or this argument or whatever it is, what this is. But the couples that refuse to take responsibility and are always defensive, like it's not my fault, or it's, you know, the reason I did this is because of you. You know, that's a dangerous place to be. And then the last one is stonewalling. This is this emotional disengagement where it feels like I don't care, I'm not going to listen. They withdraw themselves, and men are most likely to do this. Just like women are most likely to criticize, men are most likely to stonewall. And this is something that men tend to do. And so when I read those, and the whole point they said is when you have a disagreement, now all couples do this at some level. I don't want you to hear this and be like, oh no,
doomed,
honey, we're doomed.
Call the attorney.
The whole idea is if these are done with what you want is you want 4 positive to 1 negative interactions when there's an argument. So the whole idea is it doesn't mean that you can never have an argument. It just means we deal with our arguments in a respectful way. But if you're always, if it's always these 4 things, the chances of your marriage not making are very high because no one's learning, no one's growing, no one's adapting, no one's changing. And so these just become a natural part of how you interact with your spouse. And that's just not healthy. So again, we're not bringing the Bible. It's just this guy has studied couples for 30 years and can say through his research of divorced couples, he found these are the 4 major components that lead to divorce when couples get stuck doing these 4 things. So anyways, I learned that. And with that, we're out of time. So
we'll have to hit this again because we got more, right?
We got more. Okay. And this has been a really great conversation because I think, Dan, again, you've been married 34 years. I've been married
38.
I'm sorry, 38. I've been married 24. I think each of us could even testify to say, man, I've got to improve on areas in my communication.
Oh, for sure.
None of us really ever arrive at being experts at these things.
You don't. And, you know, sometimes I'll hear, you know, I've been married 25 years and never had an argument with my spouse.
I don't believe that.
Yeah, I don't either. What else are you lying to me about? You know, we had a knockdown, drag out our first week of marriage, you know, on the honeymoon. it happens, right?
It happens, yeah.
So the important thing is that you learn how to navigate it.
Yes.
I don't know that I'd want to be married to somebody I didn't argue with anyway, because I just, you know, for me, it's a sport. but when it comes down to it, part of human existence is to be able to navigate these things and then end up unified. And so that's why it's an important topic, and I hope we'll talk about it again.
Yeah, we will. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. And I was right. The book that Dan suggested was old. I just wanted to let you know.
I use an updated version that was updated recently. I can never be wrong.
I
hear contempt in your voice.
I'm poking.
You're criticizing me right now. We're going to get a divorce.
Thanks again for joining us on Life Talks. We will continue this conversation next time, and we'll talk to you next time. Marriage. I'm sorry. I just had to.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay.
What is the line? What is it? Marriage?
Marriage is what brings us together. All right. We'll cut that.
You've been listening to Life Talks. Be sure to hit the subscribe button so you never miss a new episode. Share this podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to let your friends and family know about Life Talks. We'd love to hear from you as well, so leave a comment and let us know your thoughts on this episode or any other topics we've discussed. Life Talks is a ministry of Life Fellowship in Cornelius, North Carolina. For more information on Life Talks or Life Fellowship, visit lifecharlotte.com, or you can find us on Facebook at Life Fellowship Charlotte.